Good morning and welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Thanks for joining me today. All week we're talking about family financial matters today and more valuable information, more valuable discussion today as we continue that discussion. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin. If you'd like to find out more about information about Concordia University, just visit our website, kfuoam.org. Go to the sponsor section and click on their logo. It'll take you right to their homepage and you can learn all about Concordia University, Wisconsin. And speaking of Concordia University, Wisconsin, one of our guests today actually is from Concordia University, Wisconsin, welcoming our guest on the phone, Steve Taylor, Director of Financial Aid. Welcome, Steve.
Well, good morning.
It's great to have you with us today as we're going to talk about paying for college. Also joining us on the phone, Dave Wegenke from Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Welcome, Dave.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So we're looking at paying for college. What a an important topic as we think about the future. Whether you're whether you've got a young one, a youngster. In my family, we're expecting our first child in September. So, trying to think big picture and long term, what lies ahead in terms of preparing for his education down the road, whether it be college or other options. We'll be thinking about that, obviously, here in the very near future, but also for other students, you know, whether you're just now starting to think about paying for college and you have a child in middle school or high school, or whether you're an adult and thinking about returning to college. We're going to talk about how do you go about paying for that? How do you go about managing that, especially as good stewards of God's gifts to you in money and other resources, time and things like that, that God provides to us? If you'd like to join our conversation today, you can do so. You can join us by emailing us here in the studio at family@kfuo.org, or you can call the studio at 314-821-0850. Outside of the St. Louis area, you can call us toll free at 1-800-730-2727. So let's start with, let's talk about the various ways of paying for college. Steve, let's start with you. What are, college can be, when we're talking about a 4-year degree, college can really be quite an investment, a significant investment.
Sure.
And
becomes a very kind of wide open question. And the first thing you want to consider is, there's a wide range of cost into schools. You know, there's some schools will be very inexpensive, and there's some schools that are very expensive. Now, when you actually get to the point, and maybe we're working ahead, you know, we'll go to the end, and maybe we'll go back to the front. But in terms of when you're actually in school, there are there's a considerable amount of resources to help a student attend. There's the first thing that we encourage all students to do who are attending Concordia is to complete a FAFSA. The FAFSA is the free application for federal student aid. It's a federal application that makes a student eligible for all the federal programs that they currently have. There's grants and loans and other various resources, including work study, to help a student attend. And on top of that, many schools, including Concordia, have sizable amount of institutional resources to help a student pay for school.
So there are a variety of ways to go about a lot of, especially financial aid, a lot of options depending on a person's eligibility. Let's go back to the FAFSA. You mentioned that, and I know that that is really the first step when it comes to applying for financial aid.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of whatever kind of financial aid it is, usually it involves a FAFSA or at least some sort of application. Now, the FAFSA stands for
the Free Application for Federal Student Aid.
Okay, and so that's the first step, really, in terms of applying for any kind of financial aid, and that's a government document, and that can be completed online, correct?
That's correct. You can go to FAFSA.gov. It's important that you go to the .gov, because there actually is a service out there, .com, which actually will, for a small fee, do the form for you, but there's no need for that. You can do it at .gov for free. The FAFSA really does two things. The first thing it does is it determines the eligibility of the student. In order to be eligible for federal student aid, a student needs to be a U.S. citizen or a permanent resident of the United States. So it checks and determines that student's eligibility for financial aid. And the second thing it does, it determines a student's financial need. And this is where we get a lot of questions from families who, perceive that they will not qualify for anything because they perceive themselves as middle class, upper middle class. And although the federal government has many need-based programs, there are some programs that have no need consideration at all. So, like for instance, an unsubsidized federal Stafford loan, any student would be eligible for that, regardless of their need. Although the FAFSA is going to collect that and it's going to give the student a score in terms of their need, regardless of the student, as long as they're an eligible student, they're going to be eligible for at least some federal student aid.
And that could come in the forms of loans, as you said.
Yes, okay. That is correct. Mm-hmm.
So not everybody is going to be eligible for grants or
correct. That's going to be need-based, and depending on what the new formula sets every year, it'll determine who's going to be eligible. And there's sometimes factors change in a family that maybe would make them eligible, or maybe we weren't eligible from the get-go. A situation might occur where your first child goes to college, and then maybe a year or two later, you have a second child going to college. The fact that you have two in college will actually reduce your EFC, and so you might become eligible as that second one enters.
Now, you mentioned an EFC. What is an EFC?
I'm sorry.
I know what it is because I have a background in enrollment management. But
I'm glad you caught that. The FAFSA, this is kind of what I tell families. The FAFSA asks 150 questions of you and your family, and it gives you back one little bit of information, and that's what we call an EFC, your expected family contribution. And this is an index that it returns to determine the ability, as the Department of Ed sees, the family's ability to pay for school. And so that score is going to be what determines your eligibility for a Pell Grant, and also it's going to be able to determine your eligibility for a subsidized loan as well as other federal aid sources. Now, the other thing that the FAFSA does, I want to mention, is that it also will, in many cases, submit the application to the state. So you have one application that is your application for all federal aid. It's scoring your financial need. It's also sending your information to your home state and might qualify you for additional state aid. So the FAFSA is a very important, a very helpful, and a very powerful form that in one place you can apply for all those different things at the same time.
So we're starting really with the FAFSA. That's the first step. Once we're looking at enrolling for that coming year, in just a little while, we'll get to we'll talk with David Wegenke a little bit more about thinking long term and planning for that and preparing for that financially after we work through these steps for financial aid. So in layman's terms, we start with the FAFSA. We fill out this form online. It uses information. What type of information is collected in FAFSA? What do you need to enter in that form?
Sure. There's going to be two basic types of information. There's going to be biographical information, including a student's name, date of birth, social security number, address, contact information, email, phone number. And if it's a dependent student, it's also going to ask the same information about their parents.
So for the typical student, the high school senior graduating and going into freshman year of college, you're going to most likely going to be using the student's information as well as the parent's information, the social security number and tax information from the tax year that you just completed.
Right. And so the second half of that would be the financial information that's going to include your tax information as well as your asset information. So it's going to ask those general information. And there's actually a feature now within the FAFSA where if you've already filed your tax returns after a short period of time, you can actually have those automatically populate your IRS data from your FAFSA itself, so you don't even have to key the data in.
Which saves about 2 hours of time.
A lot of aggravation when it works fine, and also can help with some other issues down the road. So then you would be just limited to your asset information, and that includes your current balance of bank accounts as well as non-retirement investment information.
When I was working with students in the enrollment process, I would often say this was prior to that new feature that populates all that information in the form for you based on if you filed electronically. Prior to that, when they had to do the fill out the form online and enter each line individually, I encourage students to speak nicely to their parents and buy them a carton of their favorite ice cream and sit down in front of the computer and get it all done in that 2 or 3 hours that it takes to get it done. So what a huge leap that made by being able to, if you file, I believe it's if you file your taxes electronically, it gives you that option, just a checkbox or something like that. You click yes, and then it can pull all that information from your electronic
file. And the thing I want to mention right away is, right as we're talking about this, is that the college that you're considering attending, that financial aid office is and should be a resource for you to complete that FAFSA. We get questions all the time from a family that's been, you know, trying to fill it out. They're very frustrated. And a 5-minute conversation with the financial aid office, we can resolve their questions, and they're on their way. So don't hesitate. Even though you haven't even enrolled at that school, don't hesitate contacting that school and using them as a resource when you have questions.
Absolutely. Great
Andy,
advice.
One thing I would add to that from experience is that the FAFSA, a lot of that is offered on a first-come, first-served basis. So we encourage our families to, you know, file that as soon as they can on January 1st, and oftentimes they don't have their income tax information. And so you can put estimates in there, and then to concur with what you were both saying, then you can, that's great that now that if you electronically file that they can add that right in there. But they do let you do an estimate to get it in there as early as possible.
Great point. Thanks for bringing that up, David. When to complete the FAFSA, that's really key. When can you, what's the earliest you can complete a FAFSA, and then how early should you be completing it? Steve, you want to?
Well, sure. I would agree with what Ken said, is that the earliest you complete it is January 1st. So we kind of kid in the financial aid world about, you know, halftime of the bowl game, go and complete your FAFSA. but you can use that estimated information. The FAFSA allows you, in terms of your filing status, allows you to state that either it's been filed, you're not going to file. So if the child, the student, has not filed taxes, doesn't have a job, that's fine. You know, FAFSA accepts that. Or a will file. And a will file is basically saying, I haven't filed my taxes yet, but I will. So it allows you to get that information entered. And the best way to do it is take your previous year's tax returns, use that as a basis, look at your last pay stub to see if there's any changes, do a good faith estimate, and then go ahead and submit it. And that's going to be really helpful, especially if you have an incoming freshman, when you're trying to, you know, evaluate different schools, and certainly cost is becoming an important factor. The school can't give you a final financial aid award until they get that FAFSA. So you get it in, the sooner you're going to get that, and the more information you'll have sooner. The one thing to know is that even when you submit the FAFSA under a will file, you will be required to go back in once you've completed your tax returns and update that FAFSA.
And so, David brought up a good point, too, that the earlier you do it, the is better, not only because you're working with a financial aid office at the college, but because there are some types of aid that once they're gone, or the early bird gets the worm, especially when it comes to state aid, because the states usually use the FAFSA as well. And I know here in Missouri, if you complete that, really the guideline is to get it done by April 1st. And if you have it done by the beginning of April, then you may be eligible for Missouri aid as well, which is, so it's wise just to get that done as early as you can. Super Bowl is a great time.
Yeah, and I think federally, nationally, it's June 30th, but you're right, that's correct with the state of Missouri.
And the same thing in the state of Wisconsin. There's not necessarily a deadline date. What happens is once the allocations have been awarded, there's no more, and students just get put on a wait list. You know, there's no funds to receive it. So at Concordia, we actually have a preferred filing date of March 15th.
And that's a great time too. Want to make sure that you're getting it done early. So the earlier you can do things in the process, the better. Okay. So we complete the FAFSA, and that kind of gets us in the queue. Even if we haven't decided for sure on what college we're going to, we can still complete the FAFSA, even if you don't know what institution you're going to be enrolling in. Correct?
Absolutely. The FAFSA allows you to submit it up to ten schools at a time, or no schools. So you could go ahead and submit it without really knowing what you wanted to do, and when you wanted to add a school, it's a very simple edit change. You just log back in, add that school, and resubmit it. Even if another example of a time when you would do that, which is pretty common, is you might decide in April or May you want to add a school. You've been looking at a couple schools, but then all of a sudden you have a school that's added. You just log back in, you add that school, and resubmit it.
And then most institutions would receive that information electronically, correct?
That's correct. We'll receive it within 1 to 3 days of your submission electronic submission.
That's amazing. When I was in college many years ago, that process, it was filling out these pages upon pages, and you had to mail it in, and you could only mail it in a certain time, and you couldn't mail it priority mail, and all these restrictions, and then it would take, you know, a while for someone to actually key all that information in their system, their database, and process it, and then turn around and mail the information back to the institution. So to do all this electronically has certainly changed that process. I would assume that also impacts how colleges can determine aid as well. Does that impact, you know, now that things are electronic, I'm sure that makes things a little bit easier for you in some sense, doesn't it?
Oh, sure. I mean, we use technology quite a bit. I mean, the files all come in one ginormous file every day. We can analyze and process them all in one fell swoop. We have rules based on the awards, and we're able to provide it out to the student a lot quicker. The process you described was probably similar to what I experienced with, you know, old bubble forms and stuff. I don't know if you remember those.
Yeah.
Where, you know, from the point that a student submits a FAFSA, they may have an electronic award notice from a school within 5 to 10 days, which, you know, from where we were, that's unheard of. But
right.
That's becoming more of the norm, where we can get it and we can process it, get out the student very quickly.
Gone are the days of waiting months for that information
right,
to come
right,
back.
Yeah.
So the EFC, then, is the estimated family contribution. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And that you would get back electronically as well from
right. What happens is you submit your FAFSA online, and then what they do is they send back to the student what they call a SAR, student aid report. This report does a couple different things. Number one, it gives them an output of all the information they submitted. You see a lot of common errors such as you key in mom and dad's income where it's asking for the student's income. Right? That's one we see a lot. Now, that's obviously going to impact the EFC quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll be able to see all the information you submitted. It also will give you what we call common codes, which are information that the FAFSA is giving back to the student, as well as it will give you that EFC. And that EFC is going to be the same regardless of what school you submit it to.
And so that EFC kind of gives you an idea of what you're responsible for, and does it give you really an indication of what you might be eligible for as well?
Well, it's probably not going to do much for you. The one thing it will tell you is whether or not you're eligible for a Pell Grant. Outside of that, you're going to need the financial aid office at the institution to take that application, evaluate it, and make the decisions of what you're eligible for. So that by itself is not going to be very helpful to determine what kind of aid resources you're going to be eligible for.
And I'm sure most of our listeners know what a Pell Grant is, but just briefly, what...
Sure. The Pell Grant is a federal need-based grant given to low-income students. It's been around a very long time, and it awards up to just a little over $5,600 a year to students at the greatest need.
Excellent. So it's a grant that doesn't have to be repaid, and it's
yes,
for
correct.
Need-based. Now, David, you mentioned your experience with the FAFSA. Are you talking about from personal experience in your family or working with other folks?
Both. And, you know, you'd mentioned what schools to send those to. And what we encourage our families to do is, you know, somewhere in that late summer before their senior year and the fall of the senior year, to be working with admissions and a guidance counselor and, you know, doing some things like personality profiles to see what kind of a major or what kind of an area of life that they're suited for, and then to start thinking about colleges that fit that rather than, you know, kind of where is my boyfriend or girlfriend going or what's the kind of the fun sports school that's locally, what is a fit for you, and then sort of work from that rather than just kind of a hit and miss approach.
There certainly is a lot to consider as you're thinking about college and financial aid and paying for college is certainly an important something else, you know, that's an important part of that process. Steve,
yeah, and with some planning, I mean, you can really save on some costly mistakes. I mean, this is a really, really big area of people's lives. And I don't think that there's a lot of well-thought-out plans out there in general. If they're exposed to information like Steve is sharing, then it can become a wonderful process. But it's very much, in my experience, kind of hit and miss, gut feeling type things. And people don't even know the money that is out there available to them. So there's a lot of myths around, I make too much money, or, you know, federal aid is always for somebody else. A well-thought-out plan working with somebody like Steve at the college can save lots and lots of money and help, you know, that kind mm-hmm. of that year one mistake where, oops, yep. this isn't where I want to be or it isn't a fit for me.
Right.
I want to add to David's point and totally agree with him, and also add that the value of actually a campus visit. A student may want to go to some far-off place, even though it might be expensive to travel there. going and visiting it, you know, as that senior in high school, and don't go someplace sight unseen. I see that on occasion, and students, you know, their expectations aren't met because they haven't done their research.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're on one of the Great Lakes?
Yeah.
There's a beach here?
You know, what are you talking about? Yeah. Right.
Well, you both have brought up great points that there's a lot to consider. I want to talk a little bit more. We've got a few more minutes before break to talk about aid. And then when we come back from the break, I want to talk about long-range planning that David is really knowledgeable of. We've talked about grants. We've talked about starting the process, the FAFSA, grants, and a little bit about student loans. We also mentioned work study. Where does that fit in the picture?
Work study is another one of the federal aid programs. And work study is a wonderful opportunity for students to receive federal aid by working for their institution. Many schools, if not all schools, have work programs where they allow their students to get campus jobs. In my office, we employ four students this summer. And the students who qualify through this program, depending on the school's allocation, a portion of that student's income or salary is going to be paid through that federal work study program. And so it's a way for a student to help themselves by working, and a lot of times they're on campus, so it's close and it's convenient, fits into their class schedule, able for them to earn a little bit of income to help pay their college costs.
And students who are eligible for that generally are, is it safe to say generally are also eligible for Pell Grants, or they have to be?
That's maybe not an absolute.
Okay.
The at least at a school like Concordia, which, you know, we're a little bit more expensive than a community college, is that there are going to be a fair number of students that don't quite qualify for Pell but may still qualify for work study. So we're able to offer it to a lot of non-Pell eligible students.
So it's a broader audience. That's good to know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Good. And then I'm sure there are colleges that also offer campus positions beyond work study.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, just to give you some perspective is, of our total amount of dollars we expend on student employees, I think our federal work study allocation from the government is only about a tenth, you know, of what that what we spend. So only one in every $10 is being subsidized by the government. So we use student workers a lot more than what the government allows us to use to pay them. And so I guess the point is, even if you don't qualify for work study, there still may be campus employment opportunities at the school.
And that's valuable to the student as well. Gives them a sense of ownership in the whole experience at college. It gives them an opportunity to contribute, not only to earn money, but also to contribute to the life of the college and the work that's going on there as well. What a great opportunity.
And also, I mean, it's very valuable to the school. I mean, our student, you know,
right.
You know, I guess I'll brag a little bit about our students. We have wonderful students. They're incredibly sharp, bright, and hardworking. And if it wasn't for them, we'd have a lot of difficulty getting some of the things done that we need to get done every day in our office.
Just briefly, we've talked a little bit about we've mentioned student loans. That's certainly an option as well that pretty most students would be eligible for. Is there anything that would prevent someone from being eligible for a student loan?
Let's talk a little bit about student loans. To be eligible for student loans, you need to be an eligible student. That means you need to be a U.S. citizen, or you need to be an eligible non-citizen, which would be some sort of permanent status, non-citizen status. As well as the other thing that could keep a student from eligible for federal student loans, if they're in default of a previous loan, would keep them from eligibility for future loans. So if a student took a loan, left school for a couple years, decided not to pay that loan, and then tried to come back, they wouldn't be eligible for more loans. The federal student loan program, every year I have students questioning why we consider that a financial aid, it's a loan, is that a federal student loan is a program that if you're qualified for, you're going to be offered. It doesn't require any credit check. It doesn't require any cosigner. If you're eligible for it, regardless of your credit or previous financial history, they're going to offer it to you. The programs are offered, the Stafford student program is offered a part of it can be offered in a subsidized way, and then there's an unsubsidized way. The subsidized way is for students with financial need, and the unsubsidized is for any student. Some of the advantages to the federal student loan program is it doesn't require any payment of the student until after they've ceased attending and 6 months. So the student graduates, their first payment's not going to be due until 6 months after they graduate.
All good to know. We'll pick up with that when we come back right after the break. We're talking with Steve Taylor, Director of Financial Aid at Concordia University, Wisconsin, and Dave Wegenke of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans as we prepare to pay for college. Stick around on Faith and Family.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of Inspiration in Action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
John 15, verse 13 says, "Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends." This was the case for Sarah Rivera, a 15-year-old student. She saw shots being fired in front of her apartment in the Bronx. People scattered, but a stroller with a toddler inside was left in the line of fire. Sarah bravely ran into the middle of the gunfight to save the young child, and in the process was hit in the leg with a bullet. She pushed the stroller to safety before falling to the ground. In this day and age, when we hear of so many teenagers aborting their babies, it's encouraging to know there are teens like Sarah Rivera who would put their own life on the line to save others. May we go the extra mile to protect babies from abortion.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson, extending a warm invitation for you to join me for Moments of Assurance each weekday from noon to 1 p.m. on Worldwide KFUO. Each day I'll share scriptural encouragement along with practical thoughts, humor, trivia, news items, wonderful Christ-centered songs and hymns. It's a great spiritual recipe for your noontime hour. So join me, won't you? That's Moments of Assurance, underwritten in part by Mid-American Coaches and Children's Christian Concern Society, an LCMS-recognized service organization.
Our mission at KFUO is to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ to the nations. Today's internet capabilities give us the opportunity to do that. Listeners from all over the world can follow the ministry of KFUO via our website, Facebook, Wi-Fi radios, and smartphone apps. You can listen to KFUO Radio 24 hours a day, anywhere, with our on-demand programs and live audio streams. Worldwide KFUO at KFUO.org.
Faith in an undistracted, victorious Savior is the power then to live an undistracted, victorious life now and forever. Jesus is clear. Rich towards God, that's the key to life.
Pastor Gregory Seltz, this week on The Lutheran Hour.
Sundays at 12:30 and 5 p.m. on Worldwide KFUO.
The Obama administration remains opposed to legislation that would add President Franklin Roosevelt's D-Day prayer to the World War II memorial in Washington. As U.S. and Allied troops launched the 1944 invasion that led to the defeat of Nazi Germany, FDR asked the nation to join him in prayer.
Almighty God, our sons, pride of our nation, this day have set upon a mighty endeavor.
A bill sponsored by Ohio Senator Rob Portman calls for private donations to pay for a plaque or inscription of that prayer to be added to the World War II memorial.
After 70 years, this prayer still has the power to bring us together.
But at a Senate hearing Wednesday, the National Park Service's Stephanie Toothman said,
"Anytime you raise an issue of separation of church and state, you always have the possibility of a suit."
She also said officials generally oppose making additions to a completed memorial. I'm Steve Coleman.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Today we are talking about paying for college, and we have joining us today on the phone two excellent representatives on the topic and experts financial aid and paying for college and long-term planning for that sort of thing. So we're talking with Steve Taylor, Director of Financial Aid at Concordia University, Wisconsin, and David Wegenke of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans about paying for college. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so. If you're in the St. Louis area, call us at 314-821-0850 or outside of the St. Louis area, 1-800-730-2727 or email us questions and comments at family@kfuo.org. Right before the break, Steve, we were talking about student loans. Was there anything else that you wanted to mention? We were talking about what would prevent someone from student loans.
Well, we talked about, you know, the general eligibility requirements. The only thing I want to add, two things I want to add. One is that there are additional loan options that a parent can borrow, as well as private loans and additional loans to federal loans if a student needed it. The last thing I want to mention is that we encourage all students only to borrow what they need to borrow, especially if you don't, you know, need all of it to pay your bill. There's a lot of temptation just to borrow the max and use those for, you know, things that maybe a student could live without. And so we encourage them to be good stewards and only borrow what they absolutely have to.
Good advice. Great advice from someone who has student loans. You should listen to Steve Taylor.
Someday you're going to get married and have a child or a second child, and maybe a spouse won't want to work. And if you have the burden of the student loan, it may have to dictate some of your life decisions. So, yeah, borrow only what you have to.
Good advice.
Yeah.
All right. And speaking of good advice, we've talked a lot about financial aid and all those things you do right before going into college. Let's think more big picture, long term. David, here it is. It's all yours. What should we do?
Well, first let me level set a little bit. I want to say hello to Pat Ferry, who's the president of Concordia, who was my campus pastor at the greatest university in the United States, the University of Wyoming. Now, Rod Zwanitzer will tell you that, I'm sure, but Pat had a huge influence on my life, and so if you would greet Dr. Ferry for me, Steve, that would be great.
I will do that, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, a few things. I guess we could start with a little bit of the debt thing. I mean, there's all kinds of articles in the Wall Street Journal and on, you know, AOL Finance and just different things about the oftentimes crippling debt that students are coming out of college with. And so part of Thrivent's mission, and I know a lot of other companies and financial advisors as well whose mission is this, is to educate a whole generation on planning early on to help not saddle your kids with a lot of this debt. Now, there's different philosophies on what percentage that you want to pay. Some people want their kids to have skin in the game and feel that they'll value their education more. Some don't want to help at all and feel like they will really, really feel that and have skin in the game if they pay for all of it. And some want to pay for all of it, 100% of it. So I think you have to start with your own family's philosophies and values and determine what exactly you want to do for your kids, but there's no doubt that a college education is valuable, and you know, all kinds of articles out there on this too. But the latest from a Wall Street Journal article from July 23rd, just last week, college graduates earn an average of $1 million more than high school graduates during their career. So men earn about 63% higher, and women about 70% higher. So, you know, there's no doubt that a college degree is extremely valuable financially, as well as some of the other values that you have. So it gets to how exactly do you fund this thing? And I guess we could start there, Andy, in that a lot of the times, you know, I'm in full-time management now, but I still run a lot of joint field work with new advisors when they come into the business. And a lot of times we'll be sitting down with people in their late 50s or even early 60s, and I see you know, they just signed on for another 30-year mortgage, and that they might maybe have $20,000 or $40,000 in a 401k account. And we think to ourselves, how could they have worked their whole lives and sign on for another 30 years, and this is what they have in their retirement? And oftentimes what they say to us is, yeah, we don't have a lot, but we did put our two kids through college. Mm-hmm. Now, that is an admirable thing, but it almost seems to me to be kind of backwards, because there isn't any bank or institution out there that is going to sign on to lend you money for your retirement, but you can list hundreds of institutions that will loan you money to pay for an education that could be paid back later. So the goal is to get people educated enough to start early and be disciplined and save regular. And so there's a few different ways you can go, but how does that sound, Andy, initially when you...
That makes a lot of sense. You know, an education is certainly something that is going to have a return on it. Retirement, no one's going to lend you money to pay for your retirement. So
yeah, you can't go back. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's a few vehicles that you can start with. once you've determined what percentage you want to help your kids with. And probably the most common one that people hear about is a 529 plan.
Right.
And, you know, basically a 529 plan is just a college savings plan that's it's got tax advantages. I think 49 states have one now. And it's called a 529 plan because that's just the internal revenue code number for this plan. So it allows people to save money in an account, and their earnings grow free from federal income tax. And then when they use it to pay for qualified higher education expenses, they get the money tax free. So it's a really, really advantageous place if you're going to use it for qualified education expenses. If you don't use it for that, it becomes taxable. The gain becomes taxable, and there's also a 10% penalty. So
a 10% penalty plus you're paying the taxes. Okay, that's good to know. I've had friends ask that, and certainly those are things that we're looking at right now too. What's the best way? What are the ways to save? So 521 is one way to save. That those are basically pre-tax dollars that you're investing, and then when you use it, as long as you're using it for a qualified education program, then you don't have to pay tax on it. Is that correct?
Actually, after tax, you don't get a deduction.
Oh, okay.
For it, but if the growth and everything, if it's used for qualified education expenses, then it's tax free. And
I
you
see.
Can pass it. You know, it doesn't have to be in one child's name, and it's you know, it's transferable to siblings, other family members. So there's quite a bit of flexibility. It doesn't have to have one child's name on it. There are a lot of families that just have a fund called college education, and they might have four children, knowing that one of them may decide not to go to college. Maybe one goes to a community college and one goes to a regular four-year college, and they just use it as one kind of pot to go into. But there are others that say, no, let's keep it separate just to kind of keep it fair and not commingle, and they start one for each of their kids.
And a qualified educational program, I'm assuming, would be a college or institution that's regionally accredited. Or are there other things besides that, like you said, the community college or the four-year college? Are there other educational programs that would be that you're aware of that might be that would qualify for that?
The vocational schools and the community college are also eligible too. And then the qualified expenses are the tuition, any mandatory fees, books, supplies, equipment, room, board, even transportation's included in all that. And so, again, quite a bit of flexibility inside of these plans.
Good to know. Okay, so 529. And
can I jump in just about the 529?
Absolutely.
And its relationship to the FAFSA.
Sure.
529s are a wonderful tool. I have three of them myself, my three children. Is that a 529 is going to be considered an asset of the parent on the FAFSA, and they're going to consider the 529 plan of all children. It's just something to be aware of. The one kind of thing right now, how the law stands right now, and for a long time they seem to be changing this every year, but it's been a while since they've addressed this, is that a 529 that's owned by a grandparent that they've got set aside for a grandchild is actually excluded from a FAFSA. So we've had a lot of, you know, I've had a lot of friends and say, oh, I have my parents want to set up a college fund for my child. Is it better for me to be the owner of it or for them to be the owner of it? Right now, there actually is some benefit to the FAFSA for the grandparent to be an owner of the 529.
That's correct.
Good to know. So if grandparents are thinking, you know, a nice Christmas present every year or a birthday present or something like that, that might be a good way to go about investing, and that benefits everyone then. Good to know. Okay, so 529. Anything else that we need to think about or talk about on the 529?
No. Again, you can get lots of information online about that, and you want to look at it. It's become very competitive, and now one of the things we used to do is look at what each state was charging for fees, but it's become very competitive, and most states are very, very close to each other in what the fees are. And just because you would use the state of Missouri's 529 plan doesn't mean your child has to go to Missouri. There's just, like I mentioned, 49 of the states, including Washington, D.C., I think now, they all have a form of a 529 plan.
So you could use it across the U.S., basically.
That's right.
Okay. That's good to know, too. That was another question that my wife and I and some friends had. You know, if we started a program here in Missouri, but, you know, our child wanted to go to college in Colorado or Wisconsin or somewhere like that, then is that going to benefit them, or is that money just going to be, like you said, taxed? We'd have to pay the taxes on it and a penalty as well. So good to know that that can go with them wherever they go.
Yeah, some of the confusion lies in, and there is a couple of different 529s. One's called a prepaid tuition program, and then the other, the one we're talking about, is the savings. And essentially, the difference is with the prepaid tuition, parents, grandparents, or other, you know, people, they can purchase future tuition at today's rate. The program then pays the future college tuition of the beneficiary at any of the state's eligible colleges or universities. So there you do get kind of locked in. And they will see that if some of our listeners go to the websites that are out there. They will see, you know, prepaid tuition and savings programs and probably wonder what the difference is. That's what it is.
So that would then, that would limit you to the state schools in that state, correct?
Yes, and sometimes even just a particular school. So, you know, we get the question, which type is better? It just depends on the college plans and the investment needs of each family. So most states, though, have created some innovative savings programs that, you know, sort of unique to each state, but you know, that's why you would work with somebody like Steve or a financial advisor, or probably both, actually, to see which one makes the most sense for you.
That's good to know, the difference then between the two of those. The prepaid tuition is certainly a different program. All right, so we've talked about 529. What are the other options in terms of planning ahead and saving or preparing?
Well, one of the things we're doing with people a lot is a concept called double duty dollars, where we're finding that people, obviously, in light of the fact that Social Security may not be there in the same form in retirement for them, most companies aren't offering pensions now, so the onus is kind of on the individual to work through a 401k plan. So the need for retirement savings is really, really great for everybody. And they want to save for college, too, so they can kind of double those up by using a Roth IRA. And, you know, how a Roth IRA differs from a traditional is a Roth IRA, you don't get a deduction in the tax year. The earnings grow tax-deferred, and then when you pull the money out after 59 and a half, it's all tax-free. There is one exemption in there, though. There's actually a couple, death or disability, but there's also, you can pay for qualified education expenses out of that Roth IRA money, too, and not have it be taxable. So a lot of times when we're doing a full comprehensive plan on a family, there just simply often isn't enough dollars to fully fund everything they want to do. So we go with this Roth concept saying, if you need to pull it out of here, you can do that for qualified education expenses.
And you can do that before 59 and a half?
Correct, and not be penalized on it. And if they don't need it, the kids get a scholarship or they don't go to school or whatever, you just leave it in there and it continues to grow tax-deferred, and the withdrawals will be tax-free.
Excellent. And anything else about the Roth IRA?
Not really. You know, the only thing you have to watch out for is, you know, you can be phased out. You know, not everybody is eligible for a Roth IRA. It starts phasing out in the $178,000 a year, and over $188,000, you're out. But the vast majority of people are eligible for a Roth IRA. And not only is it good for college funding, but very few people have kind of that tax never bucket for their retirement as it is. So it really does kind of do two things at once.
Yeah, I like that double duty dollars. That gives you some flexibility, but not a lot of penalties. You can use it for the two things that are important that we seem to be talking about all the time, either
right.
Education or retirement. So that's good.
Yeah.
529 Roth IRA, and anything else, other options?
If there's an insurance need, you know, if you're a breadwinner or anybody who has a life insurance need, we are often using some form of cash value life insurance too, because, of course, there you can take either taxable withdrawals out of your cash value, or you can take loans against your cash value and then pay yourself back later. It'd be very similar to borrowing from a 401k, only it's you're borrowing from yourself and you're paying yourself back. So there are lots of people, grandparents especially, who are looking at life insurance with cash value as a vehicle to dump money in. And there's no, the insurance companies don't ask you what you're using the money for. That's your money. The only stipulation would be you have to pay it back. It does accrue interest. Or if there was a death, they would just subtract that amount off of the death benefit. So, but cash value life insurance has a lot of tax advantages. It grows tax deferred. just like a Roth IRA would. And again, the tax-free loan provision can be really, really good too.
Obviously, the long-range planning and investing in a plan like these is going to help you avoid, help your child or your student or you avoid things like student loans, excessive student loans, and you know, excessive debt from college. And you've pointed out some other reasons too. You know, the Roth IRA, that's a double duty, or you know, using the cash value life insurance, things like that. They could serve multiple purposes. Any other reasons that, any other benefits to that you can think of for making these kind of investments? Any other benefits to that besides, you know, thinking retirement, the double duty Roth IRA? Any other benefits that come to mind?
Well, mostly going back to that, what's becoming a, you know, Steve probably has better numbers than me on this, but what we're seeing is it's becoming almost a borderline crisis with the debt that students are coming out of college with. And, you know, if you come out with $150,000 or $200,000 or even more in debt, I mean, just think of how long oftentimes it takes to pay off. You know, that's like another home for some people. And so there's been a lot of debate in Congress about, you know, they just, I believe it was just yesterday that they passed where they kept the rates a little bit lower. But that's why it's just so crucial, if you've got children or grandchildren, that you really want to value education for them, to get the process started early. And for the vast majority of people, it doesn't have to be that way. There's a combination of saving, federal aid, just different things that can help alleviate that, so they're not saddled with that, you know, right when they get into the job market.
Steve, would you say that you encounter a lot of families that are really knowledgeable of these types of plans and have made these types of investments? Or would you say that the majority of the families and the students that you meet and work with are really not even familiar with these at all?
Well, I think that it's growing. We get more, you know, from when I started, you know, 9-10 years ago, from where it is now, I think there's more families that seem to have a grasp on these things. But it's not as many as you think. We give a lot of families that are just not very well prepared. And so it becomes, you know, becomes a real kind of, I think, eye-opening experience to them. And those are the families that are having the difficulty or having to borrow excessively. I think that this is education, especially at a young age. You know, when's the best time to start saving for your child? Is, you know, as soon as your child gets issued a Social Security number, right? I mean, there's I think not near as much as what there needs to be.
In part, they had a statistic, that Wall Street Journal article that I referenced. The cost of a $100,000 education, if you borrow, is $145,000, but if you saved and invest, it's only $65,000. So again, it's just all that early planning and that that can make all the difference. And the gist of the rest of the article is that, you know, in light of what happened in 2008 and people being under prepared for retirement now, that parents are able to shell out much, much less. And so that's gone down from $8,700 a few years ago to $5,700 a year average. And so, again, where is that difference made up? It's usually the person will have to go into some form of debt to pay for that.
Absolutely. And when we're talking about families with multiple children who are, you know, thinking that all or most of the children are going to go on for at least a four-year degree, I'm sure that's overwhelming and daunting to think. And so I imagine probably our mindset is, I'm just not even going to think about it right now because it's too overwhelming. And then we end up putting it off longer and longer. And then we end up with kind of a mess. You know, we only have a couple of years then to try to save for college, or no time at all. And then we're trying to do the other route and pay as we're going. And it just becomes a kind of a mess and a blurry situation.
Yeah. And here's a comforting number though for you, Andy. I mean, $50 a month, if you start when the child is born, if they get around 7%, you know, that's going to be $21,000. So the solution for a lot of people is going to be, well, maybe we can't fund all of it, but let's fund as much as we can. And so we don't want to let how overwhelming this seems let us procrastinate even further. And so, again, when's the best time to start? It's right now. If this is what's really important to you, There's no better time to start than right now.
And we see at Concordia a larger, growing number of families having to change their plans, you know, where the student's going to attend, based on this lack of preparedness, is that they're coming, and it's really sad to see that, you know, they're having to make a different change of plan. They have a student who's qualified and would thrive at an institution, but are having to make a different decision because of, you know, essentially poor planning, you know, 10 years ago, 18 years ago.
And another thing we see is that I am certainly a fan of public education. I'm a product of it, as I mentioned, but a school like Concordia, Wisconsin, if that would be someplace you'd want your child to go, you know, to do the things Steve was talking about earlier, get into the FAFSA early, start applying, because oftentimes that's a myth, too, that these private institutions are more expensive than a public, because oftentimes there are the things that Steve was talking about earlier that they can actually make your out-of-pocket costs lower than a public university at some time. So, again, the key thing is explore it, be intelligent about digging into this, and have some sort of a plan. Don't just rely on a hit and miss or think, well, that's just out of my reach. We don't even want to look at that.
Good point. Don't just look at the bottom dollar and say, oh, that school costs too much, and overlook the fact that that the award that institution might be able to provide, whether it's a private institution or not, might be able to really overcompensate for, or compensate at least for the you know, the higher cost there at that institution. And I would imagine generally that comes from especially private institutions, or you know, schools like Concordia, where they have a strong alumni base and alumni support and foundation and things like that. Steve, any thoughts?
Oh, I would agree. I'm glad you brought that up. What we've seen in the last probably decade or so is that public education is becoming a lot more expensive than what it used to be. And so we found that through additional aid sources, through continued growth and endowments and scholarships the university has, but also the increase in cost in the public school, the public state schools, is that you're finding the price at, and in some scenarios, become a lot more competitive than they used to be, for sure.
Definitely. Well, I really appreciate both of you spending time with us today. Any final thoughts? We'll each get about a half a minute or so here. Dave, any thoughts from you before we wrap up?
No, in the end, you know, what's important is just that you want to provide a good college education for your child. You want to be a good steward of your resources. You want to help them stay out of debt. And, you know, with some planning and some intelligent thinking, a lot of times that can be accomplished.
Good point. Planning ahead can make that college experience a better experience for everyone, too, so that they can be faithful of all that's been entrusted to them. Great. Steve?
Well, just real quick, same thing. Plan, prepare. Don't hesitate to contact your financial aid office. As a high school student, do as well as you can. Keep your grades up. Look for outside scholarships. We didn't even get to talk about that. Be a good steward of the resources you have as you plan, and prepare and visit and make a good decision.
Outside scholarships, great idea. Any resources off the top of your head that you would point them to?
There are numerous of them on the web. There's now I'm blanking
Fast
on them,
web.
Of course. But just be careful. Don't give out any personal information you don't
sure.
feel comfortable with, and never pay a nickel to apply.
Absolutely.
And you can go to thrivent.com/collegematters, and it has links to about 10 of those things that we've been talking to, all the government websites and the College Board websites, et cetera. It's all right there.
Well, you both have been extremely helpful, and I think answered a lot of questions for me and for other parents who have either little ones or students who are looking at college in the coming year. So we really appreciate your time today, and we hope that that you'll continue doing what you do to help families and others. We're so thankful for your support of KFUO and for Faith and Family today. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on Faith and Family, we'll be talking with Jim Doerr of Coldwell Banker Gundaker about stewardship and buying a home. Is it a good investment? So stick around. Moments of Assurance up next on Worldwide KFUO.